Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, June 1st, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamminini.
And I am Broadway Stars James Marino.
James, you might not have seen it yet, but I dropped a little sound clip into our shared Dropbox folder that maybe you can play either underneath what I'm saying right now or maybe at the top of the show. It is the one, the only, the incredible Leslie Uggams kind of singing June is Busting Out All Over and just making up words. Maybe she's scatting. Maybe she's scatting to June is Busting Out All Over. But that is where the meme that we talked about yesterday comes from. It's at some performance. It looks like Stacy Keach introduces her. It's outdoors and maybe at like a 4th of July thing or a Memorial Day thing. And she absolutely has no idea what three quarters of the words are. So that is where that meme comes from. Neither you or I are necessarily meme guys. So I did a little looking and that's the video. So I'll put the video in the show notes, but definitely, hopefully we can play that at some point because it's pretty awesome.
So I'm looking at this video here and the first line of the video says, this is not Leslie Uggams.
Yeah, it is. What the full line is, this is not Leslie Uggams singing June is Busting Out All Over. I think what that means is that she's not actually singing that song because most of the words are not actually.
It was ironical.
Well, maybe, because if you look at it, it's definitely Leslie Uggams. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. First story of the day. Big one. It was actually yesterday. Audible creates $5 million fund for playwrights.
Yeah, yes, it was a great, great story, James. On Tuesday, Audible, the Amazon-owned audiobook company, announced that they would create a $5 million fund to commission new works from emerging playwrights. However, unlike most new works commissions, these plays will not be designed to be seen on stage, but rather to be heard via Audible. The fund will look for playwrights to create one- or two-person plays. Writers will submit their plays to an advisory board who will then recommend the recipients. The board of advisors who picks the recipients are a bunch of hacks who have no idea about good drama. They are Annette Bening, Lynn Nottage, Tom Stoppard, Henry David Wong, Trip Coleman, Lee Silverman, Oscar Eustace, and Mimi O'Donnell. Maybe the name that most people don't know off the top of their heads, but she is the artistic director of the Labyrinth Theater Company off Broadway in New York. The amount of money per commission will vary, but the playwrights can apply for grants to cover both, quote, industry standards for new commissions in addition to the cost of production. James, I think I've talked about how much I love podcast fiction on this show, but I know I've talked about it on Some Like It Pop. So I love that whole world and kind of seeing how that's exploded for audio fiction. But to have a group of incredible board members and tastemakers like that, so, you know, picking up new playwrights is not only great for fans of Audible and for audio fiction, but I think it's really cool for the theater itself because it gives those young playwrights increased revenue stream, as well as giving these new voices much needed amplification to hopefully make them, you know, a little more well-known and respected as they try to get their foot in the door to either New York theater companies or major regional theater companies to produce other new works as well.
So I think that their first thing should be The Encounter, which wasn't my favorite play, but I think it would be a really interesting audiobook.
Yeah, not exactly emerging writers, but
no,
it's definitely
sure.
Something that's different and would probably do well on its own. They probably got enough money behind that, you know, to do that as well. It would seem to me, though, James, it would have to be something done in stereo, which most audiobooks and podcasts are not. Do you think it would need to be in stereo as opposed to mono?
The Encounter, yes. The Encounter, that's their hook there is this 360 oral sound thing that they have going there, which I think that shouldn't be a big deal for Audible. I mean, you know,
no.
Audible
yeah.
is Amazon. Well, Amazon is Jeff Bezos and Bezos.
And I just saw that their stock traded for over $1,000 a share yesterday or something, which is obscene. But anyway, on a completely other note, if anybody knows of good podcast audio fiction that I should be checking out, please feel free to tweet me at BWWMatt. I'm always looking for new stuff. Or if you want recommendations of stuff I've liked, let me know and I'll send you some stuff.
All right. Next up, Zoe Kazan's new play, After the Blast, to open LCT3's season.
Yeah, yesterday, Lincoln Center's LCT3 program announced that they would kick off their 2017-2018 season with a new play by actress and writer Zoe Kazan. The world premiere will be directed by Lila Neugebauer, who is one of those directors who is getting a lot of work right now, and will begin performances on October 7th and run through November 19th. After the Blast is set in the wake of a total environmental disaster, when the human population has retreated underground, experience is simulated, fertility is regulated, and Anna and Oliver have one last chance to have a baby. Zoe Kazan, as most of you will probably know, is the granddaughter of legendary director Elia Kazan. She is also an award-winning actress and writer. The last play that she wrote to debut in New York was MTC's production of We Live Here in 2011. She was most recently seen as an actress off-Broadway in Roundabout's Love, Love, Love last season, and she appeared on Broadway in Comeback Little Sheba, The Seagull, and A Behanding in Spokane. She was an Emmy nominee for her work in the miniseries Olive Kitteridge, and she was recognized as both an actress and a screenwriter for her independent film Ruby Sparks. She's also a great follow on Twitter. I'm a big fan of Zoe, so I'm excited to hear about this one, James.
What is her Twitter handle?
Oh, Zoe in the, I don't know, Zoe in the City, Kazan Twitter. It is, yes, Zoe in the Cities. I was close. Zoeinthecities. I will put that in the show notes. If I completely butchered it or you are not close to your, close to a device to follow, but yeah, she's great. Very smart, very fun. It was a little rough there in her Twitter feed after the election because she was definitely feeling it like a lot of us were, but she's got some really great stuff in there. So I'm excited to see, what happens with this play when it debuts in October.
All right. So next up, we have Actors Equity announces the first ever director of diversity.
Yeah, yesterday, Actors Equity Association announced that they had named their first ever director of diversity in Nicole S. Smart. Good name for a position like this. Before coming to Equity, Smart served as the Associate Director of Leadership Development for the NCAA and served as the Legal Coordinator for the NFL's Management Council. She's a BF, or she has a postgraduate degree in union leadership or something like that. So that's really, really cool. Smart, who begins immediately, will be responsible for furthering Equity's goals toward greater inclusion and diversity, both within the organization and the broader theater community. James, with all of the discussions that have been having taken place lately about colorblind versus color conscious casting, you know, thinking of the Edward Albee situation out in Washington, in addition to representation on stage and whitewashing of ethnic roles, I think this is an incredibly smart, no pun intended, and proactive move for Equity. And I'm excited to see kind of the initiatives that she and the organization put in place. And I think she would be a great guest to have on one of our shows at some point, because, as you know, these are topics that I think deserve a deep and longer conversation. So I'd love to kind of see the perspective she has after she's been in the job for a while.
I was up at Equity yesterday and visiting David Levy over the social media manager up at Equity, yeah. And he did not even hint about this to me. I'll have to smack him sideways. So,
were you paying your dues? Are you still an Equity member?
No. I was just visiting David, actually. And so I think we should get Nicole on. Yeah, that'd be great. Love to do that.
Awesome.
All right. Next up, the Tony Awards announce more stars participating. Finally, you, Matt?
No, not a big enough star yet.
Great.
never. The Tonys announced a handful of stars who would be appearing at the Tonys. They don't say whether they're going to be presenting, which I think most of them will be, but there is hope that maybe a few of them show up in some sort of song and dance segment. In addition to the previously announced Josh Groban, Bette Midler, and Ben Platt, joining the telecast will be Orlando Bloom, Stephen Colbert, Tina Fey, Josh Gad, Taraji P. Henson, Scarlett Johansson, Anna Kendrick, Keegan-Michael Key, and Olivia Wilde. James, with the exception of Taraji P. Henson, who I am in complete favor of appearing on any and everything that she wants, all of these folks have legit Broadway connections, or in the case of Keegan-Michael Key, who doesn't really have a Broadway connection, he is making his off-Broadway debut as Horatio in the Public Theater's production of Hamlet 9 days after the Tonys, so I think he counts. So while a lot of these folks have a pretty good amount of pop culture cachet, I'm glad that these are legitimately theater folks. I think the Tonys have been very smart over the last few years about not just bringing in random stars or people who are on CBS sitcoms to present. They're actually getting people who have pretty good name recognition, whose names they can slap up on a commercial, but they're legitimate theater folk.
I know this is a great list, and it seems that the Tony Awards and Scott Rudin are still arm wrestling. So as we find out more about that, we will let you know. But right now, there's really nothing more to report that we haven't already talked about.
Yeah.
So I didn't want people to think that we've ignored the Riedel column, because the Riedel column was just a recap of, you know, Riedel just recapped what Matt and I talked about.
Yeah, and he does have a few quotes from Scott Rudin that basically confirm the things that we'd assumed, that we've read between the lines. So if there's more, I'm all over on this one. James, I don't know what I think will be the ultimate outcome. I think at this point we have to assume that the word is that Penny in My Pocket, is that what the name of the song?
Yeah.
Is going to be what they perform until we hear otherwise, because I mean, I don't know who blinks first, you know, or even if blinking would change anything at this point.
Okay, so next up, Encores Off Center announces Assassins Songwriting Competition? Question mark.
Yeah. No, there's no question mark. But man, after the whole Kathy Griffin thing, and I saw some really bad tweets about Kathy Griffin and this production of Assassins. So I'm a little uncomfortable with how this might go. But yes, yesterday, New York City Center's Encores Off Center series announced that they would be holding a songwriting competition inspired by The Gun Song from Stephen Sondheim's Assassins, which just so happens to be the first show of their season. The winners will participate in a panel to discuss their influences. They will receive a $300 honorarium. And I want to get this wording correct, James. They will quote, you might be selected to present your tune to Stephen Sondheim himself. You won't necessarily be guaranteed that option, but if Sondheim deems it worthy, you might be allowed to present it to him. We'll have the complete rules and entry information in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. Entries must be received by Friday, June 23rd, because Assassins will kick off the 2017 Off-Center series on July 12th and will run through the 15th. James, I love Assassins. If you've listened to the Some Like It Pop Listapalooza episode where we count down our favorite musicals, it is in my top five favorite musicals. I just, between this and the public theater's production of Julius Caesar, which has not gotten as much negative attention as I thought it would, so I'm glad I was wrong there. I just feel like, man, why are we asking for trouble? I mean, I'm fine with arts pushing boundaries and calling and speaking truth to power. But this just seems like this is looking for somebody to do something stupid.
Let's hope that the human race is smarter. Can we hope for that?
You can hope all you want, but man, I don't know.
Hey, we have a topic here, but nothing else underneath it. It just says
yes.
Matt's soapbox.
Yes. Okay. This is because literally I threw this on at the end of the script because it happened from a discussion I was having on Twitter while I was writing this script. I actually was delayed a little bit on getting on Skype so we could record because of this. Okay. This all started because some wicked fan account tweeted out that they would want Adrienne Warren, who I've been a fan of ever since I saw her in the world premiere of Bring It On, the musical at the Alliance Theater in Atlanta. They thought that she and Ashley Spencer, who I've been a fan of since Grease, You're the One That I Want days, they should play Elphaba and Glinda in the Wicked movie. And then Adrienne Warren, Tony nominee from Shuffle Along, she said, quote, "Those closest to me know Glinda is my spirit animal. There is no reason a woman of color couldn't play that role or any other." And then with a couple of my Broadway World colleagues, Alan Henry and Casey Mink, we started realizing that I don't think there's ever been a Glinda played by a woman of color in the 14 years of Wicked on Broadway, in North American national tours, and then internationally, as far as we know. Now, if someone knows of a woman of color who has played Glinda, please tweet me, BWWMATT. There have been a number of women of color to play Elphaba, Sekhan Singhblah, Lindsay Mendez, Mandy Gonzalez, name a few. Fierro, Tay Diggs played Fierro early on in the run. I think when Norbert had a leg injury, he did it opposite Adina. That was when they were still married. So there have been other principals in the show who were of color. Granted, Elphaba's always of color because she's wearing green, so you can't really tell. But it just seemed odd and a little disappointing for this, of all shows, to have not had a woman of color play Glinda. So I have launched on my Twitter feed, where nobody cares what I say, Adrian for Glinda. That's my new hashtag that I will be promoting. So if you want to join in that statement, let's get Adrian Warren to play Glinda at some point, because I think that would be awesome.
I learn something every day on this podcast.
Well, that's kind of what we're trying for. Yeah.
I had no idea Tay Diggs and Norbert Leo Butts were married.
No, stop. No. To Adina. I think I said that correctly. He was substituting for Norbert, who I think had a knee injury. I could be completely misremembering that. Wicked history is not at the top of my special skills on my resume, but I believe that's true. But I know he played Fierro at some point as kind of a few months as a sub.
All right. Why don't you get us out of here?
You're killing me, Smalls. All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWDB Matt, and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
I'm just getting Matt back for that snipe at me about Chris yesterday. But this is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending some of your Thursday with us. Come on back tomorrow, and we will wrap up the week with you.
What did I say yesterday? I have no idea what I said.